The environment was changed due to policies at the top, and the people at the bottom didn't do what they were doing before. Dr. Powers, what light can you shed on this subject?
Well, a couple of things. In the early warning system, you're right, wasn't important and is an important system, especially and just as an aside, especially in policing, where you're taking 21-year-old young men who, by all sociological studies and physiological studies, brains are not fully matured yet, and giving them the power to remove individuals from existence. And either your training has to be tight, or you need an early warning system to let them know when you have someone in that system that should not have that much authority. That's an extremely, I don't think we even think about that enough when we just talk about regular civilian policing, to take a 21-year-old young man or young woman and give them a power in a society where we give very few people that power. Even the president doesn't have that power to remove an individual from existence based on a split-second decision. And so the early warning system was part of a system to help identify those who would have trouble with that much authority and that much power. And when you look at what we're looking at today in terms of the torture and how we go at those involved with it, clearly, I don't know if anybody should get a pass on this, whether they're at the top or the bottom, but certainly those at the bottom who actually, in many cases, carried out these executions, because it's not the normal state of mind for human beings to torture other human beings. And as an individual in an organization at the bottom rung or carrying out these specific orders, you have to be absolutely clear that those who are your superiors believe in this particular policy, are consistent with it, it almost rewards you for carrying it out, because it takes more than just an order to have you do this. You have to believe there's some kind of reward for it, because otherwise, just innately inhuman nature of torture would keep you from doing it.
Dr. Powers, we all want to say something. This is Mark Levine here. You used the phrase twice, remove from existence and one-time execution. Now, torture is an awful, horrible thing, but remove from existence, that to me means taking someone out, actually killing someone, murdering someone, executing someone. Are you talking about things beyond torture?
Well, I think that in many cases, and I think what we'll find if we ever do a thorough investigation of these torture cases, is that many of the people who were tortured did not survive. So we're discussing torture, we're discussing waterboarding, because some of those people who face waterboarding and other forms of torture survived. But I think that when we really begin to look at the statistics, we'll see that many of the people who were tortured didn't survive. And let me say this, in these organizations, whether it's the Central Intelligence Agency or the special units and agencies like the FBI and other agencies, there are two purposes assigned to torture. One purpose is to elicit information, and that's all we've been discussing over the media. We've been discussing whether it provided significant information or information that prevented another terrorist attack. The second prong of torture, which the organizations teach, is just mere punishment, to send a message to anybody else who would do this that we will not just eliminate you, because death in and of itself, all of us are going to face death. So sometimes death in and of itself isn't considered punishment. Torture is carried out in some cases, severe torture that, if you just think about it, scares you to death, is carried out to send a message. So torture is not always done in the Central Intelligence Agency or any of these other agencies just to elicit information. Sometimes it's done to send a message. And we don't even discuss that aspect of torture, because once we begin to look at that aspect of torture, we will begin to look at how many people have actually died against all kind of Geneva Convention violations and all kind of other violations between nations. But we're talking about the ones that have essentially survived these torture.
Terry D. Kester, yeah. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, Dr. Powers, this is Terry Kester. And, there's a couple things here. One, the third reason for torture, and I think the primary reason for torture, which is certainly true historically, and I think true in the most recent cases, is to get the individual to say what you want them to say. And that's the whole point. I mean, you have the idea. I mean, for instance, we know already that in the Bush administration, they wanted to create a link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, and that they started torturing specifically because they couldn't find that link. They couldn't make that link, so they were trying to force somebody to say, oh, yeah, that's what's happening. And the way you get people to say what you want them to say is through torture. And the question that I want to lead you to with that, first of all, that, but second, as you were saying in terms of the training thing that you were doing in terms of preparing young men, it takes a culture does it not, to allow for torture, whether it's a culture in an agency or a culture in society?
Well, yeah, it does. It takes both. Well, let me just follow up on your other point. I still think that is within the two prongs, because when you say you elicit information, it doesn't mean that information is actually true.
I think that was his point, actually.
You're still trying to elicit information, and you may want them to get them to say what you want them to say. In many cases, to be quite frank with you, you're going to get misinformation anyway, because if you torture someone long enough, they're going to tell you whatever you want to hear, and that's going to not have anything to do with the truth. I mean, even if it's intelligence information, it's very unreliable, and I know that for a fact from my work as an FBI agent working counterterrorism and counterintelligence. You cannot build a case where you do not want to go out and spend a lot of money investigating leads from someone that has been tortured, because you're probably heading in the wrong direction. And while you're heading in the wrong direction, the people who are really involved in terrorism have more time to do what they need to do. So it's counterproductive all the way around, because it sends you on false leads. It sends you in the wrong direction. As to your second point, you're absolutely right. There has to be a culture, more so not, even if it's not a culture in the society itself, and to an extent that is true, but in the agency, it has to be seen as acceptable, and not only acceptable behavior, but behavior that is actually rewarded. See, acceptable behavior means that everybody is doing it, it's okay. But in order to get an individual, even if everyone else is doing it, in order to get an individual who is not innately built like that to participate in torture, there has to be some reward. And I'm telling you, in these agencies, during this Bush administration, and during other administrations, mind you, there's not only a culture that says torture is okay, there's a culture that says torture will actually be rewarded.
Once again, you're listening to 89.3 FM, WPFW, Washington, D.C. You're here with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester here every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Tonight we have with us Dr. Tyrone Powers, Director of Homeland Security and Criminal Justice Institute for Anne Arundel Community College, former FBI agent, and author of Eyes to My Soul, The Rise or Decline of a Black FBI Agent. Mark, important issue here that came up with both of these two gentlemen in the last two comments is the information that we're getting, the ultimate end with torture being we want valid information. Is the information worthy, number one? And number two, is it possible that some of the torture was for information that they knew wasn't worthy information, just to justify what they wanted to do in the same place? What's your thought on?
Carl, I've been doing lots of stories on this ever. Frankly, before the memos came out, I began doing stories on torture 4 years ago. And what's interesting is that I've interviewed torture survivors. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed. You can listen to John McCain. I read his book because he was tortured. And the one thing that is absolutely clear is that if you're being tortured, people say what they feel they need to say to get someone to stop torturing you. So, for example, John McCain, he was asked to sign a statement that condemned America. And John McCain, hero and all that, he refused for a long time. Finally, they beat him bad enough, and he did so. And in saying that he did so, which, by the way, John McCain admits in his book, this isn't some secret information,
right.
I'm not condemning John McCain. I'm not saying I would do otherwise. If they're torturing me, I'll sign whatever I need to sign. My friends and family and colleagues will understand that I don't mean a word I said, just as I certainly don't believe John McCain intended to condemn America. But whether it's John McCain or whether it's on the other side, Abu Zubaydah, what do we learn from him? What did he tell agents? He told them a lot of false information. They spent millions of dollars going the wrong direction. And he also told them true things that he knew they already knew.
Right.
For example, Jose Padilla had already been arrested. 2 months later, he mentions Jose Padilla. And now today, Cheney says, see, he told us about Jose Padilla. Yeah, he told us 2 months after it was public information.
Well, let me just say this. I would sign anything and talk at the mere threat of torture. It wouldn't be necessary to torture me. I mean, they could just say, we once tortured somebody and we're considering torture. I'd talk.
Let me ask Dr. Powers, too, because there's another aspect of this. I mean, you say people have to be rewarded to commit torture. Now, all of us have encountered bullies. All of us have encountered, I don't know, even perhaps criminally insane or really nasty people, to put it nicely, you know.
And people who are a little off, mentally off. I mean, they don't have to necessarily be evil. They could just be a little crazy.
Unstable.
Unstable, sure.
Yeah. And doesn't there have to be a real element of sadism for anybody to go ahead and torture somebody else. I mean, actually physically. I don't mean in a remote way, but I mean to, you know, physically be with that person, to grab them around the collar that was put around their neck so they can slam their head into the wall, to give the one gentleman, I forget which one it was, that was waterboarded 183 times.
Right, right.
I mean, there's got to be sadism involved in that. These aren't normal, healthy human beings.
Well, and let me say it this way. You're right. And I believe that most people who are involved in that kind of behavior, not all people, because some of them just like doing that, and there's been studies done on executors involved in death penalty. Initially, there is some resistance. After a while, there becomes a sense of numbness. And after a while, they justify it, like all violent activity is justified, sometimes even in the mind of the sick. And what happens is you get a group of individuals who initially resisted and say, I can't do this, and it's difficult for them to stomach, for the first torture, for the second torture, for the first waterboarding, for the second waterboarding. And then after a while, to be quite frank with you, they become immune to it. They think they become immune to it, but at some point, at some level, it affects them even after they leave those kind of positions. Because I think what would be an interesting study to do is to look at those who actually were involved in torturing people and see what their existence were like when they were no longer in that capacity, even when they left the Central Intelligence Agency or some military service or some intelligence agency, not necessarily in this country, but in some country around the world, and see how that came back to haunt them. Because it's not something that every human being innately wants to do. It is easier, and this is what I know, it's easier to kill an individual by shooting them than it is to continuously hear them scream out in pain because of being tortured, or to watch the results of torture.
Yeah, and yet, I got to say, it may not require sadism, but maybe someone who just follows authority. We've talked before in past dialogues about the famous Milgram experiments of the 1950s, where you take ordinary people off the streets.
60s,
excuse me. All right, you know more about, okay. But the guy in the white coat tells the ordinary human being, you know, turn up the switch, do the electric shock. They weren't really shocking. And ordinary people did that despite the screams because they were being told by authority. I have no doubt that Lindy England, the 18-year-old woman from West Virginia, I don't believe she goes around, you know, pulling the tails off puppies at homes. I don't know that she's a closet sadist. I think she felt that this was her responsibility, that she was protecting her country. She got a direct order, and she did it. And so for some people, it's not sadism. For some people, it's simply following orders. Not that that's not a good thing, but I just think that there's two different kinds of people that do that.
Which can't be used as an excuse, particularly in this country, because our own military code of justice says that is not an excuse. You have a right as a soldier to say no. In fact, you have an obligation to say no. Now, not many soldiers have the guts to do that.
Although one of them gave us the pictures from Abu Ghraib, brave soldier.
Yeah. And that brings up another very relevant issue, Dr. Powers, and that's this. Going after the people at the lower levels, those who actually executed the policies, brings up the question of people at low levels refusing their orders based on, you know, on their morals and ethics, etc., which we all say, you know, you ought to do this, but how many people actually have can actually follow through? In fact, we saw what happened during the Iraq War when some people said, hey, this is illegal under international law, I'm not going to do it. They got slammed, they went to jail, etc.
They were court-martialed, sure.
Right. What about the issue, Dr. Powers, of people having some kind of an expectation that people who are in a lower position are going to say no to these powerful figures?
Well, I think there are more people in those positions and that say no than we will ever know about or ever read about or ever hear about, because it's not it wouldn't do the policy of torture much good to say that there are numerous people that resisted, because I believe there will be more people that resisted based on that. But I do think if you're going to prosecute, you have to prosecute even those that carried out those executions or that torture, because otherwise, in the future, everyone will continue to use that excuse. I'm not suggesting that. And what usually happens, unfortunately, is those are the people who are prosecuted, and then the people who actually carried out or sent the orders down the line are able to use some plausible deniability to say that this is not what I meant when I gave this particular order, because the way they give the orders is not to go out and torture someone specifically, but they allow themselves some plausible deniability. But I think that prosecution has to take place from the top to the bottom, and I think to say that prosecution will not take place, or that we're not interested in prosecution, or that that's history, or that that's in the past, is really a dangerous precedent. Not only, I think Colin Powell, when he was in office as Secretary of State, indicated something that was extremely powerful, that once you begin to say torture is okay, you can expect more. Not that American soldiers haven't been tortured already, right, but you can expect more of that. And you can expect more of it being done openly.
If anyone wants to get involved, just call 202-588-0893. That's right. If you want to be a part of dialogue, call 202-588-0893. My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine and Terry D. Kester. And tonight we have with us Dr. Tyrone Powers. We're discussing the issue of torture, the issue of the prosecution of torture, and a lot of other things that we go around those issues. Mark.
Yeah, I'd like to raise an issue. For whatever we decide about whether or not the lower down people should be prosecuted, people like Linda England, can we all agree, the four of us, that whatever crime she committed, whatever awful thing she and others did, I don't mean to single out her.
The nude pyramid, you mean?
Right. I just point to her because I think she's perhaps one of the least culpable of the torturers. Can we all agree that the people who ordered the crimes are definitely more culpable, more criminal, and if you're going to put Linda England in jail, you need to put John Yoo in jail. And if you're going to put John Yoo in jail, he's of course the lawyer who wrote the memos, you need to put Dick Cheney in jail because John Yoo only wrote the memos to please his boss, Dick Cheney. That the culpability rises as you go further up to the top. It doesn't go down. Do you all three agree to that?
No. Well, yes and no. I mean, if you're saying excuse her, no.
Well, I'm not saying excuse her. I'm just saying that whatever culpability she has, her bosses are worse.
The culpability rises. There's no question about that. Because not only are they advocating the torture and allowing the torture or finding a legal justification for it, they are doing it at a very safe armchair distance.
Yeah, Dick Cheney's sitting in his chair and saying, oh, let's waterboard the guy 183 times.
Yeah, and this is there's something really, in my opinion, really quite sick about that alone. To be able to do that and knowing that it's not going to be, you don't have to do it. It's worse than sending soldiers to a useless war. You know, it's the same kind of mentality, but it's actually worse to say, you go ahead and torture him. You know, it's on you.
I was going to say, because Dr. Power said that in the past, and he's right, that in the past, a lot of times the lower down people get prosecuted and the presidents. What they said about Abu Ghraib. They said a few bad apples. Pretending that this 18-year-old girl from West Virginia decided on her own to put people in a pyramid and attach electrodes to certain private parts. I mean, I don't think that was her idea. And the fascinating thing to me is that George Tenet, the director of the CIA, was very careful. He basically said, look, I don't want you coming and blaming me years later. If you want me to do this, I want it signed on the dotted line. The president, the vice president, and they signed. So doesn't that mean, and I want to ask Dr. Powers this, doesn't that mean at the end of the day that we have to go after Bush and Cheney?
I would hope so, and I think that does mean that. The reality of the matter is, and I think everybody's clear on this, besides that signed document, prosecuting them with evidence that proved them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt is extremely difficult because at that level, they're going to make sure that they built in some clause of deniability. And unfortunately, as you indicated earlier, the people who actually execute these tortures do not protect themselves in that fashion. They're not even thinking that way. They're not even thinking about possible prosecution. They're not even thinking about being caught. But those at the other end of the spectrum, while they may have this signed document to prove them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt or to say that they specifically said torture these people in this way, they protect themselves. They create and institute these policies with that in mind, with the possibility, as we call them, and the FBI when I was there, a blowback. The possibility that at some point, maybe not in the near future, but maybe in the distant future, these things could come back to haunt us. So how do we create a system where we can, even if we are charged, that we're not successfully prosecuted? And that's the difficulty, and that's the dilemma with this. I know that we can't give it out to anyone to participate in torture, even if they did it at the order of someone else, because you can say no, and I can sincerely say that from being in the FBI. There may be repercussions and consequences for that, but you have to make that decision. And these are grown folks. Even though they feel like they're carrying out orders, even though they feel like they can be rewarded for this, they still are in a position as mature human beings to an extent to make a decision as whether they want to participate in this activity and suffer the consequences, or whether they want to suffer the consequences for participating in this activity.
If you want to be a part of Dialogue with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester, call 202-588-0893. Let's go to the phones, and we have Jones. Jones, how you doing tonight? Welcome to WPFW.
Thank you. I appreciate it, sir.
So, and what do you have to say on this very controversial and interesting subject?
I want to thank you for taking my call. I'm in the law enforcement background, and I'd just like to say, having completed countless hours of interview and interrogation training, my 19-year history with the law enforcement agency that I'm with, you almost never, ever tip your hand by going physical with anyone. As a matter of fact, you want to be as sweet as possible when you're interviewing a subject and you're trying to get information from them. And this is known throughout the law enforcement background, and any good investigator that's worth the badge that he holds knows this for a fact. So I'm just completely baffled as to how the Justice Department and those involved have resorted to using this method, because it absolutely is counterproductive, and it goes against everything that any of the interrogation schools that people pay thousands, that your tax dollars go toward, almost never, ever mention anything about any harsh tactics. The most you do, the most I've ever done in a case would be, I raise my voice. But that's about it.
Yeah, I don't think that's torture.
Yeah, right. Well,
it depends on your voice, man.
Yeah. Right.
If it's one of us, it would be torture.
Yeah, right.
But Jones, Dick Cheney tells us that they got significant information. I mean, is that just false?
Well, Dick Cheney told us a lot.
When are we going to start believing Dick Cheney?
Let's go to Daryl on line
okay,
3.
Thanks,
Daryl.
Jones. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Daryl, welcome to WPFW. Daryl.
You're on the air, Daryl. Talk to us.
I think we lost Daryl. A good question and an interesting subject there, Dr. Powers, and that is just technically the technique of getting information from someone. I understand that Saddam Hussein, they got some valuable information from him, and one of the ways that it was done, they knew he had a big ego, they blew his ego up,
and then
they provoked him, and they blew his ego up, and they provoked him, and they simply used a technique that addressed this individual's personality, and that from what I've seen and understood of interrogation, it's different for every person. Some people, you can be nice to them, some people, you can provoke them, some people, you can do. Basically, the interrogation techniques are tailored towards the individual, and they work differently.
I was going to say, just some people you could trick. There's a famous case where we had a bunch of agents dress up as Saudis, and the terror suspect believed they were from the Saudi royal family. Apparently, they had the accent, the look just right, and he confessed a whole bunch of things. So I'd just be curious, also from Dr. Powers, from his own experience, what interrogations? You don't have to give names, but what kinds of interrogations have you done, and what works and what doesn't work?
Well, I've been involved in a number of interrogations, and I would just say to the gentleman who just called in, I didn't catch his name, but
Jones.
You're right. Most of the interrogation schools, especially for law enforcement, does not teach the technique of torture, but there are, and I'll just leave it at that, there are interrogation and interview, not so much interview, but interrogation schools, depending on what kind of work you're doing, in these different agencies that teach a more physical method of interrogation. But you always have to keep in mind what is the objective of that interrogation, because some interrogations are simply, and some torture methods are simply so that you can torture them, release them, and send a message that this is what happens when you're caught and tortured. If you recall, some years ago, and I was working in Detroit as an FBI, at that time I was working undercover in a drug cartel, but we had a friend of mine who was a DEA agent, was tortured in Mexico, and they kept him alive for a number of days by putting drugs in him that actually kept him alive, and they was pulling his teeth out one by one with pliers and so, and they would send the video pictures back to us because they wanted us to say that anytime you send an agent down to Mexico to investigate the drug trade, this is what they're going to go through. They weren't trying to elicit information, and the design of that was not to achieve justice. And I would say that even though that was done in the underworld, sometimes that same objective or mission is done in the upper world. I'm not suggesting that it's right, and I think that it, in fact, I would suggest that it's wrong, but that's not what they're going to teach in the interrogation and interview school that they send most law enforcement officers to. the FBI and other organizations, the FBI have a tremendous behavioral science unit down at Quantico, Virginia, where they actually psychologically profile people to determine what kind of techniques would work against them. Not only do they psychologically profile people like serial murderers or other violent offenders, but leaders of countries. What would work if we caught someone in this position? What would work if we caught the number two man in Al-Qaeda? What will work if we caught this particular person? And they come up with these particular solutions. Some of them they publish. Some of them they send to interview and interrogation schools. Some of them they keep just to send messages. And that's just the reality of how it works. And again, maybe a more thorough and in-depth investigation need to be done, and more of this need to be revealed in order for us to put a permanent stop to this. Because the truth of the matter is this. Despite the fact that the Barack Obama administration or President Obama's administration have said that we will not use this method, we are against this method, I guarantee you that somewhere, at some point, in some agency, during the course of his administration, these techniques will still be used, whether we ever hear about them or not.
Well, we're going to have to go to a public service announcement. We'll come back with Terry. 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We're talking about torture with Mark Levine, Terry D. Kester, Garland Nixon, and Dr. Tyrone Powers, former FBI agent, author of Eyes to My Soul, The Rise or Decline of a Black FBI Agent.
Adopt a duck. Support our station. Have you adopted your duck yet? Here's how it works. Visit us online at WPFW.org, click on the duck, and then adopt your duck today. When you adopt a duck for only $5, you have a chance of winning great prizes, which include a chance of winning $1 million, an overnight stay with breakfast at Mandarin Oriental Hotel, Lucky Strikes Lane and Lounge Bowling Party at Gallery Place in downtown Washington, D.C., access to the arts, which include tickets to venues like Strathmore and Arena Stage, $100 gift certificates, good toward a dinner cruise aboard Nina's Dandy. You can be a part of the excitement as we dump 20,000 rubber ducks in a contained area of the Georgetown Harbor and watch them race toward the finish line. And don't worry, no duck will be left behind. At the close of the race, all rubber ducks will be retrieved from the water. Maybe you'll have the luck of the duck and win one of our fabulous prizes, but you won't know unless you try. So visit us online at WPFW.org and click on the duck. Let's get quacking!
Okay, from... Okay, we go back from rubber ducks back to torture.
Yeah, that's a strange transition there. I don't know that was the appropriate PSA for this topic.
Terry Kester.
two things, and Dr. Powers, I want to comment on. One, again, I want to stress in my mind anyway the idea of the culture that precedes the event. To begin with, when you name an invasion shock and awe, I mean, you know you're in for some deep problems. Secondly, I had some contacts who were friends of Colonel Tommy Franks, you know, who was very much involved in the whole beginning of this thing. And Tommy Franks literally said, you know, we're going to go after every one of them. We're going to get them. We're going to kill them. We're going to go after their families. We don't care. We'll go anywhere we have to get them. I mean, that's the kind of aggressive attitude that was there. I also happened to have, as a remote acquaintance, Judge Bybee. Currently the judge of, I think, the Ninth Circuit Court.
Don't worry about hanging around this guy myself, Mark.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, he literally said at this point early in the time, now he's actually expressing some regret, which is interesting.
Well, only after he's caught. Right. It's just, you know, it's like O.J. Simpson, right. You know, I'm you know, if I did it, then I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. But, you know, he actually said prior to all this that we're not going to take any prisoners. I mean, so this whole attitude going into this from day one, from, you know, September 12th on.
Created the environment.
We created this environment. Okay. But the other point I want to ask about Dr. Powers is, frankly, the racial part. And, I think that's important. I mean, particularly in terms of sending a message. And I think it did send a message. I mean, we know that lynching was done primarily as a crime to send a message, you know, to other blacks. And don't you think there's some truth in that in terms of the people that we were torturing, the Arabs that we were torturing?
Well, I think to an extent there is a message in that. I think that I think that history will reveal there's a number of books. One of them is called War Without Mercy that shows that more severe torture techniques are used against people who you see as ethnically or racially inferior. I think we also had that example during World War II with Adolf Hitler and how he dealt with Jewish people. So I think there is some some history that would indicate that. But I think the other thing, and I think it's significant, is that it almost to a large extent backfired, because the torture, which is supposed to deter, and let's say if your mission or your objective and some of this torture is not to elicit information, but to send a message that we're going to come after you, we're going to be brutal, we're going to be, we're not going to have any, there's no holds barred in terms of this, have sent some other nations in the other directions. There are nations like North Korea and Iran who said that before we allow ourselves to be caught and tortured, we'd rather have a nuclear holocaust. And I think that's the effect or the response that was not anticipated, that the reaction would be not fear, but the action would be that by any means necessary, I have to make sure that that doesn't happen to me. And if that means developing a nuclear program, if that means putting some things in place for biological and chemical warfare, then I'll do that. So I think that no matter how tough-minded the Bush administration thought they were going to be, and let me just say this too, though, even prior to this culture that we talk about that came along with the Bush administration, the Central Intelligence Agency, for a very long time, until probably the latter part of the 1980s, the latter part of the 1990s, had a philosophy that was their objective, to hunt down and to brutally destroy the enemy by any means necessary. And so that culture was kind of stifled during the Clinton administration to an extent. And then when the Bush-Cheney administration got back in power, they said, no, let's go back to that kind of culture and let's do it even to a higher degree. So I think what we saw is a return of something that had existed before. If we study that history, the return before, but it returned with a president that says, no holds barred, no matter what you did before, I'm bringing that culture back, and you can go at it full bore. And again, I think the blowback from that has been countries saying that I will never be pulled out of a hole. I will never be tortured like that. I will never be waterboarded for hours. And if that's the case, then we'd rather just have nuclear annihilation. So it had an effect that was not deterring other nations. It actually just made them say that we're never going to do that.
Okay, we've got on line three, we've got Douglas. And once again, 202-588-0893, and you can be a part of this tortured discussion. Douglas, line three.
That was tortured humor going on there.
No pun intended. Douglas, line three.
Yes, I'm calling in after hearing this wonderful discussion. That I'm very impressed that WTFW is actually airing it. It brings Thank to mind a book that I just recently read, Dr. Philip Zimbroder, and he addresses this fully, and it's called The Lucifer Effect. And in the book, he's a famous social scientist, and I asked all of the PFW to purchase this book because it is amazing. And he addresses the conditions that have place to get any average individual to do exactly what those soldiers did.
Mark.
Well, I mean, we were talking about that earlier, about how a lot of ordinary people might just sort of follow orders, and so those conditions. I'm curious whether the conditions in that book. I don't know. We lost Douglas. I'm sorry.
Did we lose?
Douglas, you still there?
No.
Douglas, okay. Call back.
Well, no, no. I
want to know more what he had to say.
No, I would think the conditions were the kinds of things we saw in those experiments. In other words, a position of authority, someone who would sort of take responsibility. The idea is that if you do something awful, well, hey, your superior will
well, the worst part of that, which we haven't discussed, is the doctors, the psychiatrists.
That's true.
Who were right there, were part of it, were watching it, were basically saying, yeah, keep on slamming the guy into the wall.
But that's part of what the Milgram experience tells
yes,
us.
Yes, I
that,
know.
Is that the guy, as long as, doctor says it's okay.
Yeah.
Psychiatrist says it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
what do I know? You know, I'm 18. I'm barely a kid myself. All these adults are telling me to do this. I guess it's okay. These are bad people.
Well, Dr. Powers, in this discussion, a couple things are going together. So let's draw a real quick line here because we're putting them together.
Let me go ahead. What you were just saying.
Sure.
If you look at the Truth and Reconciliation reports and the hearings from South Africa and the apartheid regime, you will see some severe torture of individuals that took place, and doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists were involved, but not only from South Africa, but from around the world. And what it became is, while the torture was designed as a deterrent, they certainly wasn't trying to elicit a whole lot of information except for a few people they caught that they knew were directly associated with the ANC, but what they were trying to do was send a message to deter anybody else from joining these particular organizations. But what you saw is these very professional people, doctors, medical doctors, coming up with potions and poisons and new way of torture that was not only used in terms of harming the people in South Africa, but was put down in books to be used in other situations around the world. I mean, people who have perfected the art of torture are not unemployed. I'll just leave it at that way. People who have perfected that art, and very professional people, very lettered people, very educated people, have provided this information at a very high cost to not only organizations, intelligence organizations in the United States, but intelligence organizations around the world. And what that says about human nature and where we are in the world today is a whole nother discussion.
Great. And let me draw a quick line. We got a couple callers, but one quick line I think we need to put up, and that's this. We're talking about we talk about the Lindy Englands and the people who really don't know, who are the foot soldiers who have no training and who are involved in these more so than torture for information, it's humiliating prisoners, etc. On one hand, and on the other hand, we've got trained CIA and trained agents who are involved in specifically designed torture techniques with intent.
And yeah, I think you have to learn how to waterboard someone. I don't think that's something that you grow up knowing how to do.
And I think we kind of get fuzzy sometimes between who's who, but there is a major difference between who we're talking about here. We got Alex. Alex, welcome to WPFW.
Dr. Powers. Local law enforcement officers often use torture to get confessions, as in the case of the Central Park jogger, the six boys that were involved. Are they taught those methods, or how does that do they do that on their own?
Well, let me say something to you. I mean, whether you define that as torture or police brutality, either way, it is wrong, and it is my behavior in a sense that many of them, policing has a number, and we can discuss this at another time, have a number of personality traits that attract certain people, that kind of John Wayne syndrome. And then when they get in those agencies, I'm the man, you never question me, and then they learn from maybe veterans or maybe people with a little bit more experience, that this is how you get information from these people. And those methods, that's line of behavior, too. All that kind of behavior is line of behavior, but that's what we begin the program. We're talking about that early warning system. You can detect some of that if all police agencies would put that in place, and if you had the kind of leadership, because when we have failed that, not only in terms of the torture we're talking about in Iraq and in Guantanamo Bay and other places, what we're talking about is a failure of leadership, and leadership is hardly ever punished. But even in a police department, if a police commissioner draws a bright yellow line and says this brutality is unacceptable and those who are involved in it will be not only fired but will be prosecuted, then you will see a significant drop in that. As we just said, the Bush-Cheney administration encouraged torture in police agencies. When you see a lot of brutality, you have leadership that either that subtly allows or encourages that type of behavior.
We've got Tesla online for Tesla. Do we have Tesla?
Yes.
Welcome to WPFW.
Oh, thank you. There is a wrong belief. Intelligence agencies are the first line of defense. To me, that's wrong. U.S. intelligence agencies have lots of intellectuals which could form 5-6 universities at any one moment. And I'm just giving this opinion because I feel I have an urge to say it. And that is the first line of defense to any country is its foreign policy, and if possible, its internal policy. Maybe intelligence agencies might be the second line of defense, but the first line of defense is a good foreign policy.
Excellent.
Think of the United States. Think of the United States right after the Second World War. It was her perception all around the world was so good, nobody could touch it. Then came the Vietnam War. Then came the Cold War. And during the Cold War, U.S. was perceived to be fighting for democracy. Once the Soviet Union collapsed and communism failed, everybody expected the United States to help in building peace, harmony, and democracy all around the world.
Well, let me just say this, Tess, for that very, very good comment, and particularly the issue of, and that's something we haven't talked about, the issue of our foreign policy here affecting that. Ask Marco a quick question, what you think about this, because people talk about one of the conversations when it comes to torture is how it affects the view of that other, the way other countries see us, the way they see us, our moral standing, the torture as part of an internal policy as far as our moral and ethics as a country, but also as our foreign policy, as you know, regarding what we're showing to other people and what we're willing to do to other people in the world. Mark, what do you think about torture regarding that issue?
You know, I'm reminded that as recently as 20 years ago, under the Bush Senior, in Tiananmen Square, the Chinese were revolting against their government, a repressive dictatorship, and they had statues of liberty, and they had American flags. And that wasn't because of any particular position we had on China. Trust me, there was nothing the Bush administration was doing to harm that government. It was because of this impression, this general impression that the United States is the good guys, that we look out for democracy and so forth around the globe. I cannot imagine today, maybe with Barack Obama we'll get this back, but I cannot imagine a year ago anyone revolting against their dictatorship and putting up American flags. We have lost that moral authority. That doesn't mean we weren't doing horrible things 20 years ago, but at least 20 years ago, people still saw America as a bit of a moral beacon. I don't think they do now, and I think that's largely what President Obama is trying to do, is to bring that back.
Terry.
I think there's an important point to realize, too. I think there's the message from the Bush administration regarding torture and a number of other policies was not just spread to the rest of the world. It was spread to the United States citizens, too. I mean, if you look back after the Vietnam protest and what was discovered about the CIA and everything else, and then the Church Committee and the Church Commission and the reform that went on the CAA that reined it back in, which obviously was, Congress, in my opinion, doing its job, Congress and everybody else abrogated their responsibility entirely on this, and I think the message was as much for the American people as well, because there's no way an American citizen can escape the fact that during this period, the President of the United States was empowered to remove from existence, as you put it, Dr. Powers, any person they wanted to.
Well, you say empowered. That suggests it was legal. I don't want to make any suggestion that it was legal.
I'm saying empowered and allowed by Congress, by us, by the citizens. You know, it doesn't. Legal is one thing. That's such a feeble excuse. Let's face it. He did it.
He was empowered
by our culture. He was empowered to do it. Nobody screamed and said, you can't do that.
Yeah, but
Congress didn't stop him from doing that. The judges didn't stop him from doing that. The citizens didn't stop him from doing that. What more power is there? And I think that's a message to the American citizen as well, that you can be grabbed off the street, you can be sent away, you can be tortured, you have no recourse.
Dr. Powers, what do you think about that?
I think that's a significant point, and I think that would be the defense, because Congress did tell the president to do whatever is necessary in order to bring the people who participated in 9/11 to justice. Now, that does not mean that you can go out and automatically violate the law, but I think that if it was some kind of prosecution did take place, I think that kind of language that Congress used and the kind of authority they gave him after 9/11 and that atmosphere of fear, which clouded clear thinking and clouded the process of designed policies to fight terrorism that will haunt us for generations to come, certainly decades, until Congress consider changing some of those laws, is what they're going to use. They're going to say that that's the language he's going to use. They told me to do whatever was necessary. I deemed this necessary. You may not have deemed it necessary. You may have deemed it improper. You may have deemed it even illegal, but Congress told me to do whatever was necessary. Now, I don't think it's right. Clearly, I don't think it was right, but I think that would be the defense of those at the top, which is why probably only those that will be prosecuted and held culpable are those that actually executed the torture method.
Mark, I've been grimacing the whole time.
You're a lawyer.
And the reason I've been grimacing is maybe because I worked in Congress in that time, and we were the minority party, but I want to defend Congress a little bit. Congress did not say, President of the United States, you have the right to torture. Congress did not say, do anything necessary. Congress did not say, we're abrogating the Geneva Conventions. It was Bush's lawyers who made these tortured, and I will use the word here, legal arguments to suggest that all this prior law,
but
Geneva Convention, wasn't there.
Minute,
they were the
Mark,
ones arguing Congress allowed that.
No, come on. Now, this was all reported to Nancy Pelosi
No, wait, now let's talk about that. That's important. Know, that's important.
You're damn right it is.
Now, wait a minute. The Republican Congress, as you know, were the people who had the right to investigate. They chose to do nothing. That's true.
Yeah.
What they told select few Democrats, and really we're talking about just Jay Rockefeller and Nancy Pelosi, is this is what's going on. You are not allowed to tell your staff. You're not allowed to have a hearing on it. You're not allowed to go to the press. If you do that, we will put you in jail. Now, maybe Nancy Pelosi should have gone to jail. But other than that, it was illegal for her to disclose it. They were
notifying her. What do you mean illegal
her.
For her to disclose it?
It was illegal for her to disclose it. It was top secret.
Illegal
she couldn't
or
even
just
tell her staff.
Illegal
to look
or just threatened.
Well, why don't we do this?
No, it was illegal. It was,
we got Michael on line three.
Rockefeller
let's get
had to write on it in pen.
Let's get an expert
because
here.
He couldn't put it on the congressional computer. I mean, that's how much
and
they
so
were keeping it
from. And so Rockefeller and Pelosi accepted the fact that you're
they
told
they did not accept it, but they couldn't do it.
They're accepted. They can't say a thing?
Look, I'm going to get between these guys. We're going to go to Michael.
Step outside,
Michael, line three.
I was telling you it wasn't so easy for them.
Mike, line three, what do you have to say about this mess here?
Well, I appreciate the enthusiasm of your panel there. That's great. I am part of a coalition of organizations that is looking to bring the members of the previous administration up on charges for war crimes. And, I mean, they did break the law. And they need to be held accountable. I mean, that seems to be what our country was founded on, that we are a country of laws and no one is above the law. But let me say this real briefly here, which is the reason I called. President Obama has just said that he will not prosecute the lower-level CIA employees who were responsible for carrying out the orders from those above him. I would also propose that those young enlisted people at the very low end of the totem pole who have been tried and prosecuted and are now in jail be pardoned. Because
hear, hear.
I think the same logic that applies to not prosecuting those who carried out the orders should extend to the military as
Where's
well.
The logic in that?
Where's
I mean, if somebody commits a crime, yes, they were ordered, yes, they were encouraged, yes, they were et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If somebody commits a crime, they are culpable.
But, well, let me just add this, Terry.
Well,
and I think
the
issue here that the caller's making is a valid issue. It's not about whether or not the person is guilty or whether or not they committed the crime. It's an issue of fairness. It's an issue that if you're going to allow the CIA agent who tortured someone to walk,
you don't allow
No.
How dare Obama do that?
What he's saying, let's not get sidetracked. But what he's saying is, in the event that you are going to do that,
then it's only fair.
If I can jump in here.
Jump in there.
Because I think there's a great way to look at it that actually satisfies everyone, I hope, here. Let's try. In the criminal law, it's perfectly acceptable. It's done all the time. You take the lower drug kingpin, the guy that's just selling the drugs on the street, and you say, tell us who your boss is, and we'll let you free.
Sure.
We
Dr.
tell
Powers
someone who drove the getaway car and the bank robbery, tell us who's involved. We'll give you immunity from prosecution. We'll give you a fine or something low level if you turn in the higher ups. It seems to me we can use this same kind of logic with these people. Say to Linda England, who told you what to do, and we'll give you a fine. We're still going to punish you, but it does seem to me that you've got to punish the higher-ups more than the lower.
Yes, I agree. But what I objected to was the word pardon.
Let's get back to Dr. Powers.
We cannot pardon people.
Dr. Powers, what's your thought on this issue of maybe granting some immunity or doing some things like that that would be less harsh on the people at lower levels?
Well, I don't have a problem with if they're willing to testify, because there's more to it than telling them that they're not going to be prosecuted. Because to be honest with you, in many cases, even if they're not prosecuted, their lives are going to be ruined in so many other ways. And so but I guess the one of the most significant things in a democracy or in a free country is staying free. So it may have some sway. But what I would say is that you do not want to set a precedent. And I agree that those who are at the top or who gave the orders should be culpable and maybe more culpable. But you do not want to set a precedent that as long
Amen.
As you're following orders, you can do whatever you want. to any group of people anywhere in the world, including torture and waterboarding. And if you get caught, then you can always say the higher-ups told me to do it, and I was just carrying out orders. Because that's not the message or the example you want to send. Somehow, you want to send a message to those who are in the future, the same level that those people who carried out the torture was, that you cannot do this, even if you get orders from higher, because otherwise you're telling them it's okay, and right. We will forgive your sins as long as you're following orders. And that's not the message you want to send. That will not stop torture in the future.
Well, no, and that's exactly what happened in Nazi Germany.
And repercussions, even if you are ordered to do this. And so for future generations or future people in these positions, do not do this expecting that we're going to let you go free just to go after the other people. And otherwise, you send the wrong message, and otherwise it'll occur again, and you'll be right back in this situation saying, let them go.
Once again, you are listening to 89.3 FM WPFW every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, Terry D. Kester will be here, and we'll do an hour, 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday on Dialogue. We'll have a great guest, as we do tonight, with Dr. Tyrone Powers, Director of Homeland Security and the Criminal Justice Institute at Anne Arundel Community College, former FBI agent and author of Eyes to My Soul.
And sometimes we'll just argue amongst ourselves.
We do that often.
We don't always have to.
I disagree.
Let me do this also before we get out of here. If you want to send any information, or if you want to contact me, if you've got any ideas for a future show, etc., my name's Garland Nixon, and my email address is garlandn, that's garlandn, at gmail.com. Feel free to email me, Mark.
My email is mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. That's also the name of my website, radioinsidescoop.com. You can check that out.
And I'm Terry D. Kester, and I'll make it even easier for you. Just go to WPFW.org. All of us are listed there, and you can email me right directly through WPFW.org. I also want to remind the folks that I will be hosting What's at Stake tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. So please tune in there where we continue all of this.
Before we get out of here, Dr. Powers, also a little bit about you. Do you have a website or anything where people can contact you? And tell us a little bit about your book, Eyes to My Soul, The Rise or Decline of a Black FBI Agent.
Well, you can reach me at tpowers@aacc.edu. That's T, this is my name, tpowers@aacc.edu. I was a Maryland State Trooper, and then I went into the FBI. I served as an agent working everything from undercover drug cartels to, which is a whole another wasted war on drugs, but that's another conversation. But, and worked counterterrorism, counterintelligence, foreign counterintelligence, and violent crime task force up in the Detroit area, and have developed this program. Here, actually, I taught for a little while at American University, a little while at Coppin State University, and then was offered this opportunity to create a program in the Homeland Security and Criminal Justice Institute at Anne Arundel Community College, where we kind of look at all these issues, and we do in-service training and conferences, such as the War on Drug Conference that we have coming up, trying to look at drug policy, and we also do conferences, and we've looked at this issue of torture. We did a seminar on it to look at the history of torture and what role it plays presently.
Dr. Powers, in your book,
we call our concept engaged scholarship, where we're not trying to just get the people to come through our program certificates and diplomas to hang on their wall. We actually want them to know something so they can do something.
Dr. Powers, in your book and in your work, are there examples of physical torture that you witnessed?
Well, not necessarily in the book. The book talks about why I joined the FBI in the first place, especially being a young black male coming out of Baltimore City, how initially my brothers and family members were against that because the police and any of those organizations were seen as counterproductive to the advancement of black people. And it talks about some of the incidents I encountered, like being a black Maryland State Trooper and having been assigned to guard a Ku Klux Klan rally to protect the Klan from the Jewish Defense League, things of that sort, those dilemmas that led me to where I am today.
Mark, let me just say this. Mark has a great website, radioinsidescoop.com, and you have a TV show online too, don't you?
I do. It's all, not only online, it's actually on in D.C. and Northern
Virginia.
But
it's on your site, right?
But it is on the site, absolutely. And in fact, I did a very powerful show just last night with a survivor of torture. He was tortured in the Philippines under the Marcos government. But he also confirmed what I found from every torture survivor. He told them what they wanted to hear, but he didn't actually disclose the name of his Confederates, even though he was willing to die for it. with the people who were fighting for democracy in the Philippines. So you can check out Orlando Tizon and his story right there on my website.
RadioInsideScoop.com. Terry, you have another show also here on WPFW.
What's at stake? What's at stake tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock? We're going to discuss the individual in crisis and chaos. We're going to discuss a little bit on Obama's 100 days. I don't want to get too much caught up in that thing, frankly. And believe it or not, we have Professor Cohn, Professor Marjorie Cohn, from author of 6 Ways the Bush Gang Has Defied the Law. We also have Professor Mark Danner, Torture and Truth, America, the War on Terror. We will be carrying on this discussion tomorrow.
What time is that?
10 a.m. tomorrow, right here on WPFW 89.3.
Well, thank you very much.
I did fail to mention, I do have thepowersreport.net. That is a website, thepowersreport.net.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Once again, you've been listening to Dialogue. My name's Garland Nixon. We've got Mark Levine and Terry D. Kester. The three of us are on every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. So if you enjoy this show, if you're having a good time, and hopefully the next time you will take the opportunity to call in. We have a lot of interesting subjects and great guests. And we're every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. Dialogue, WPFW. Thank you.
A conversation in which we all get a chance to speak, to listen, to be heard, and to collaborate to solve our problems. Participatory democracy is not just